Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Wednesday, March 25th. And we have one work session scheduled, Senate Bill 135. We heard this bill, colleagues, a month and a half ago. So, Mr. Stembridge, you want to brief us on this and then the amendment that we have?
Senate Bill 135, members and Chair Metzger, authorizes the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to authorize import of distilled liquor to order it by and en route to the OLCC by certificate of approval. The testimony we got from the agency was that this was to better regulate and eliminate financial assistance that may be offered to retailers. You have the Dash 1 amendment from the OLCC, which authorizes the importation of alcohol for scientific manufacturing and other non-consumption purposes without a license as long as they have an OLCC certificate of approval.
Okay. First of all, any questions from the committee? This was a bill that we didn't have any controversy on, and I frankly held it because of the relating clause, but I've got another one out in the committee, so I don't need to have both of them. So,
what are you telling us?
What kind of editorial comment is that?
Mr. Starr, would you like to do our Dash 1?
Yeah, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 135.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 135. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended by the Dash 1 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 135 as amended with the Dash 1 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Who wants to carry this bill?
Okay,
Senator Starr will carry. Thank you, sir. Okay, close the work session, Senate Bill 135. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 604. Mr. Stembridge.
Chairman Metzger, members of the committee, Senate Bill 604 creates a salesperson and distillery representative licenses to be issued by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
Okay, let's see. Who is the proponent? Is this Mr. Romain? Okay, and Linda? Okay, why don't you come forward? Linda Ignowski and Paul Romain.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romain. I'm representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. Senate Bill 604 creates the salespersons and distillery representative license. Basically, what it's designed to do is to put some responsibility in people that work for us. We have, right now, our companies are liable for actions these folks may do, and there's no real way to have recourse against them to make them understand that they have an interest in making sure they comply with the law. And the fee that's paid for these folks is pretty much paid by us. Employers will pay the license fee for these folks, so if they're working for us. So we would encourage you to pass the bill. I think the OLCC had this bill in 2 years ago, and we agreed with the concept of it and agreed to put it in again. We're increasing our fees, and we would ask you to pass the bill.
Okay, Ms. Ignowski from OLCC, maybe you could help us with why this is important.
Okay. Good afternoon, committee chairman. For the record, my name is Linda Ignowski. I'm the Regulatory Services Director for the Commission. We're supporting Senate Bill 604, and to kind of give you some background on this, as you know, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission is responsible for ensuring the public safety for regulating the manufacturing, the distribution and sale of alcohol beverages in Oregon. Illegal sales practices, promotions, and forms of advertisement can lead to excessive or illegal consumption of alcohol, thus creating some public safety service problems. Illegal financial assistance practices occur when a wholesaler or a sales representative or a distillery rep offer incentives to liquor retailers in order to induce them to promote sales of their product through consumer giveaways, discounts, point-of-sale materials, money, and exclusive advertising. Such illegal activities have exploded as market shares within industry have shifted, fueling competition, and as manufacturer representatives have begun a new process of hiring advertising agencies to creative promote their products. Sometimes these advertising agencies act sometimes without knowledge or consideration of the legal constraints or on advertising and financial systems, and sometimes they act in knowledge of the law and disregard it anyway. When we find a violation, we currently can only hold retail licensees accountable for violations in financial assistance laws and not the manufacturer's representative. We believe both parties, the licensee and the distillery rep, the sales rep, should be held at the same standard of the law. What this bill will do will allow the OLC to develop, will be able to license or regulate and monitor appropriate promotional advertisement practices among the sale of alcohol beverage in the state. The license fee increase for the distillery and wholesalers' licenses will help offset the cost of implementing the new license type and enforcement activities. Without these changes, those violating the law will continue to benefit at the public's expense. Those who want to comply will be discouraged due to the relative competitive disadvantage. Power imbalances between the tiers of the industry give rise to excessive promotion of alcohol, which in turn leads to various sort of social problems that result in the national prohibition a long time ago. I'd be happy to answer any questions for you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Zygmowski. Could you give me maybe an example or so of where this has produced a problem for you?
Recently, we've had two violations that have been ratified. We found that we had a manufacturer that a representative had given money to a licensee to purchase their own product, to display their own product, in exclusion of others. And so this is clearly a violation of the statute. They cannot give money to a licensee to do this. So we have two violations on two different premises in Oregon.
And what are your current recourses now under current law for that violation?
The only person that gets sanctions for it is the licensee. And it's unfortunate that sometimes the licensees say, well, the rep told me it was okay, so I took it. And sometimes it's not fair that they get the violation, they get the penalty, and the person who maybe have talked them into it or told them it was okay, there's no ramifications for them at all. And we're just trying to even the playing field a little bit and trying to make everybody accountable for following the laws of the state.
Mr. Romaine, you want to add something?
Yeah, I just want to, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're talking about the salesperson now, the person who's actually doing the work. Your previous bill, in effect, got OLCC control over the outside the state distillery. Your current law gives you control over the in-state manufacturers, in-state distributors, out-of-state wine manufacturers, out-of-state beer manufacturers. You have control. The folks that you don't have, or they don't have regulatory control over, and used to have regulatory control over, were the actual salespeople who worked for these companies. What this does is give you that hammer, you being the OLCC, the hammer over those salespeople. They can still sanction the particular company. And again, if we have somebody who's working for us who does something illegal, we should be sanctioned. But we'd like to have some kind of way of telling the person who's working for us that you too are running a risk if you do something that's illegal.
Okay. Questions for our first two guests? Senator Schrader.
I was just looking at the fee piece of this, and they seem pretty hefty. There's an annual distillery license fee from $100 to $500, then the annual wholesale malt beverage and wine license from $275 to $500. So how did you base those? Those seem to be somewhat large. So how did you come about those?
You came up with
why those numbers, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Right. Mr. Chair, Senator Schrader, this bill was introduced 2 years ago by the OLCC, and we basically just parroted what the fee was at that point. Again, this is a fee that we pay. We're trying to get money to the OLCC so they actually can enforce the laws. Again, the money that, assuming that we increase the license fee, it's up to you through your ways and means process to direct whether they can even use the money, but at least give some money that's available through license fees directly on those who are regulated that's related to what they're doing So we came up with it. We're the ones who are going to pay the fee.
Right.
We bumped our fee $500. We're more than willing to do it.
Senator Berger.
Mr. Chair, that was my question.
Okay.
It was about the fee.
Senator Starr.
Yeah, so I just want to get clear in my mind what problem we're solving here. Ms. Ignofsky, in the examples that you gave us, you talked about, and I assume it would be, you talked about an individual that basically told a salesperson, took some cash, and basically then that salesperson then served a particular distilled beverage as opposed to something else, or displayed it in such a way that gave that product preferential treatment. So cash was transacted or passed between two entities. But what you said is that's already against the law, right?
Chairman, that's who your senator said, yes.
So how does this bill fix that problem? If we already have somebody that's already breaking the law, how does this bill fix that particular problem?
Chairman Metzger, Senator Starr, maybe I should explain the example a little bit more. What the transaction is that the cash or the credit on the credit card was given to the retail licensee. The retail licensee went in, the agreement was they go buy at the liquor store their product. So they gave them the money to purchase their alcohol to be able to serve at their expense. The expense for buying alcohol for your licensed premises is the responsible of the licensee. I mean, they're responsible for buying the product. When they're given money to offset their business costs by giving money to buy their product, that is against the law. The licensee is held accountable for it, and that's appropriate too. But many feel that the person who gave the money should also be accountable, and they are not licensed. If they were licensed within Oregon, yes, they would be accountable too. It's just like having a service permittee and a licensee. If a service permittee sells to a minor, the service permittee is sanctioned and also the licensee sanctioned. So we're just trying to even that playing field.
So, again, Mr. Chair, if I can just flesh this out a little. Isn't the person that provided the cash to go buy the liquor, isn't he licensed? Or that person licensed it?
No, that's what we're trying to correct.
So that's the distillery license?
Yeah. Or the sales rep.
The salesperson. So that's the salesperson part of this equation. Who's the distillery representative? Is it just based on the same person?
It's the same person. The reason we had to separate them out is just the semantics of distilleries sell only to the commission, and so you had to separate out salesperson who are that are for like wineries or breweries. Are just a little bit different than distillery reps because distillery reps, they can't sell it directly to their retailer.
But isn't the business for whom that salesperson works for, isn't that business license already?
Yes.
Chairman Messer, yes.
So shouldn't it be the responsibility of the business for whom that salesperson works to police what their salespeople are doing?
Chairman Messer, Senator Starr, it's kind of two different things. Where the sales rep works for a manufacturer.
Isn't the manufacturer licensed?
Some of them are, because what the 135 does, it adds the distillery reps out.
We close that loop. So now they're all licensed, right?
Yeah, the manufacturers are, yes. But this is just adding to that. You've got the manufacturer who is now hopefully going to be licensed, and their reps are also going to be hopefully licensed to be responsible carrying out the laws of the state, because they're the ones that are in Oregon doing the work. The manufacturer is someplace else and trying to hold everybody accountable for following the laws of our state.
I'm just seeing that we're having multiple levels of licensure and creating more opportunities to just hire more state.
I think
employees.
Mr. Romaine wants to answer more to your question, Senator Starr, but then we'll go to Senator
Okay.
Berger. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, the problem right now is we used to license these folks. We used to have a salesperson's license.
Did it go away?
It went away when we did the sort of massive, let's combine a bunch of licenses effort in the late 90s. We took away the salesperson's license, thinking that we could just go after the distributor or manufacturer and that they would sanction. What we found is that you still have, you still really, if you are going to regulate properly, you really want to have some handle over everybody involved in the process. You do that at retail right now. Right now at retail, not only does the restaurant or bar subject to sanction if they do something wrong, but the person who's serving the alcohol, the bartender or the wait staff person, is also has a permit. So everybody in that process can get sanctioned if they do something wrong. What you're doing is closing the loop here, where for a distributor or for a manufacturer, again, everybody in the process. And yes, it is a way to grab more money for the Liquor Control Commission that, frankly, we support, because we think they've, frankly, if you are going to have rules and regs, then you need to enforce them. There are very few restaurants or bars or retailers or even wholesalers or manufacturers who violate the law. They really don't. Most people try and operate on the up and up. The problem is when somebody does violate the law and try and take advantage of a situation, you want to make sure you have the sanction available. As distributors, every once in a while you'll get a salesperson who just, you know, I gotta get some more sales, I gotta do that stuff, even though they've been warned don't do it. Now, they do run the risk of us firing them, but it would be nice if there was an additional, maybe lesser, sanction available. We as employers can't say you're fined $50 or $100 to that person. You can't do that. The Liquor Control Commission could if they were subject to a salesperson's license. We think it's a good idea. Are we going to go absolutely crazy if you don't pass it? No. If I were in charge, I would have passed it, but the decision is not mine. I did not run for election.
That's probably a good thing. Senator George.
I think Mr. Morvane answered my question. It just seems like to me that what this is a transfer of liability from the employer to the employee and spread out the risk. So I think you answered the question. I'm just not sure I agree. That's where we're going.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, we may not agree on it, but it's not transfer of liability. We're still liable. Yeah. It's just we're on the hook. We're still going to get sanctioned. Believe me, we will still get sanctioned. It's just that there's an additional way to sort of impress upon the employee that, you know, you're going to pay too for this thing. We may not want to fire you, you know, or, you know, because you're valuable to our business, but we want somehow for you to understand that you can't do this. So it sort of gives us another tool. And again, manufacturers and wholesalers are the ones who are going to be paying this fee. It's, you know, you're going to be employed by one of our distributors. It's our cost. And it's very progressive, actually, because if you have two employees, you'll pay for two, and if you have 102 employees, you'll pay for 102, so your fee will be greater.
Let's bring Ted Farley up, Oregon Wine Growers, as an opposition. I want you guys to stay there, because just there's only the three of us that are signed up to testify. So if we have other questions, you don't have to keep coming back and forth.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ted Farthing, the Executive Director of the Oregon Wine Growers Association, or the OWA, and I appear today in opposition to Senate Bill 604. Individual licenses for winery salespersons were eliminated in a previous move by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to streamline licensing requirements. Under the new system that was approved and which the OWA supported, individuals who work for a winery as a salesperson are licensed through their employer. If a salesperson violates the law, his or her employer is held responsible. We remain unconvinced of the need to reinstate individual winery salesperson licensing. This strikes us as an unnecessary administrative burden for salespersons, wineries, and the OLCC. As we understand it, money from these license fees will go to financial assistance enforcement. A much better approach is one OLCC already has launched, a streamlining of its financial assistance rules to eliminate frivolous or outdated offenses. A case in point is the current restriction that prevents wineries from announcing winemaker dinners or wine tastings in retail establishments on their websites. These are serious problems to address. Senate Bill 604 doesn't address any of them, but would create more unnecessary paperwork and expense. Thank you.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Farthing or other questions that may have developed?
I have a question.
Sarah Starr.
So if you create these licenses, I assume there's going to be some kind of training program for all these salespeople to go through? Is that so that they know what's right and what's wrong? And or is it just a cash transaction and there's not training that's going to be part of the equation?
Do you want to answer this?
Chairman Metzger, Senator Starr, you know, at this bill at this particular time, there is no particular required training that goes through the, like the service permits required to go through training. There is no requirement on this. We did not have it when we had the salespersons before. We didn't have training. We felt it was responsibility of the manufacturer. The Liquor Commission is always available to provide training, and you bring up a good point. This went through that we would probably want to provide training so people understand the law, because a lot of people don't. So that's something, a good point to bring up.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, most distributors will train their employees on what proper practices are, what you can't do. It's only the fool's going to send somebody out there who's totally untrained.
Senator Berger?
Yes. Mr. Romaine, the one thing that just kind of sticks in my mind a little bit is that these fees are quite a jump. In other words, $100 to $500, that's a lot of money, but you're very willing to pay that. And you're very willing to pay the $275 up to $500. Your comment was you want to put money in the coffers of OLCC so that they can better regulate. Would you just expand on that a little bit?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission is a regulatory agency. They have two functions, really, in the state. You're sort of schizophrenic. They sell alcohol and they regulate alcohol. We're not interested in their sale of alcohol portion of it. We may represent some distilled spirit stuff, but that's not what we're talking about. If you're going to regulate, and the state has chosen to regulate alcohol because it is different than other products out there, then if you are going to have regulations, they have to be smart regulations and they have to be enforced, because a regulation that's not enforced is not even, it's not a regulation. What we have been said all along, a distributor organization has been very forceful in saying that all the rules and regulations need to be enforced or they need to be taken off the books. You either force them or take them off the books. What we are trying to say to the Liquor Control Commission is we're willing to go to bat to try and get you more dollars, directed dollars that are related to our business, because you know we're the ones in the business. We should pay for the regulation. But your obligation is to enforce those rules and regulations. That's why we're trying to get money to them, and that's why we asked for the increase. Again, it's going to be your choice through the Ways and Means process, and this probably isn't the greatest year to be asking you to make this choice, but because there are a lot of other things out there that are probably on your mind. But it's your choice whether you give it or make it available to the Liquor Control Commission. What we're saying is, at least with our fees, as far as our fees are concerned, we are more than willing to put our money where our mouth is.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So I presume that you feel that there's just not enough regulation at this time.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, there's regulation. We, as distributors, we feel that there isn't really enough in some areas, that sometimes, you know, if there isn't the regulation that, and it's not the fault of the OLCC, because they have a limited amount of resources. It's like any agency out there. They've chosen to say certain things are not going to get our attention. We're going to focus on sales to minors. We're going to focus on sales to intoxicated people. And frankly, I'd be making the same choices they are. But these other regulations have validity. And while some may need tweaking, like perhaps the one that the wine growers are concerned with, most of them are quite legitimate. They serve a legitimate state purpose, and they should be enforced. And to do enforcement, you need money.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to testify on Senate Bill 604 today? Close public hearing on Senate Bill 604 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 802. Mr. Stembridge.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 802 allows orders for distilled liquors to be delivered directly to commission liquor stores with consent of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, creates special events distillery licenses that may be obtained by distillery licensees of the OLCC, permits special events distillery licenses for a period not exceeding 5 days, requires licensees to purchase the distilled liquor for special events from the OLCC. You have the dash one amendment that comes from Senator Bates that deletes that direct delivery provision that I mentioned first, so it leaves the special events licenses.
Okay, Mr. Eric Martin from the Oregon Distillers Guild and Thomas Irwin from OLCC, please. Senator Dr. Bates, when I talked to him about this bill, and he had indicated some of the issues in Southern Oregon and people trying to get the product, I thought I had to ask him for sure if this was this for medicinal purposes or, you know, to make this available. I wasn't absolutely sure, but he convinced me that it was really a business issue, so we have it today. Who would like to start off? You're the proponent, so maybe that would be appropriate.
Yes. Greetings, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Eric Martin, and I am the president of the Oregon Distillers Guild. I represent 18 member distilleries throughout the state of Oregon. We are all small businesses. Many of us are startup businesses, and we all are supporting the local economy by employing hundreds of people throughout the state and purchasing our raw materials through local agriculture. Right now, the craft distillation movement in Oregon has been beleaguered with a series of bad news regarding surcharges to the bottle price to our products, as well as inventory drawdowns that are a result of the budget cuts imposed on by the OLCC. These inventory drawdowns have an effect of reducing our shelf space and market visibility at the Oregon liquor stores. And the special event license amendment does provide us an additional way to market our products to the general public. The OLCC's tasting rules have currently restricted our ability to market our products by providing tastings only on the distillery premise, and further restricts our the amount of product that we may offer as a sample tasting. By having the ability to hold a special event at a place either on our premise or at a place outside of the licensed premises does provide us a new avenue to market our products. And
okay, I think let's go to the OLCC, then we'll open up questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tom Irwin. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Senate Bill 802, as it's amended in the Dash 1 amendments, would allow Oregon distilleries to conduct tastings of distilled spirits products at special events held at locations other than the distillery premises, as Mr. Martin is talking about, such as festivals, farmers markets, community events. It is important to recognize that the special events license would allow only tastings. It does not allow the sale of distilled spirits by the drink or by the bottle at these events because those activities are not part of the distillery license privileges. Sales of distilled spirits by the drink are allowed only if the distillery has also obtained a full on-premises license from the commission. Sales of distilled spirits by the bottle are allowed only at the distillery or a licensed tasting facility pursuant to a distillery outlet agent agreement with the OLCC. The OLCC is currently working with distilleries on rulemaking to further clarify the number and types of tastings that can be provided to consumers at the distillery premises in order to ensure public safety while also allowing the distilleries to promote their products. If the special events distillery license is enacted, we would continue that process with regard to tastings at special events as well.
Thank you, Mr. Irwin. The original bill is much broader, would allow people to buy and that's been taken out. And I was and so now we're focusing on providing the opportunity for these tastings. What is the OLC's position with the amended version? I assume you folks have been talking, which is what produced the amendment.
Yes, Chair. The commissioners chose to take a neutral position on it. I think partly is just kind of weighing the balance between public safety and allowing the distillery craft folks to try to grow their businesses. But in this particular instance, we certainly didn't want to be an obstacle. But for whatever reasons they chose, they just chose to stay neutral on the bill.
Okay, but
as amended. But I'm not even sure they knew that the bill had been amended in its current form.
Right.
Quite frankly, so they may be supportive of the amendment as it is. Currently, so
okay.
I would actually have to go back and check our records to be fair.
Okay.
To
well, I guess what I was just getting at is just to ensure, at least in this committee hearing, that there's no opposition to the bill as amended. You know,
no,
okay.
Not at all.
So, okay, questions from the committee. Wow. If you have any thoughts on this, Mr. Martin, that you want to share with some of the members, you know, feel free to do that. I think it's pretty, especially with the amendment, I think it's very, very straightforward, and it's consistent with what we've done with other in growing the craft distillery market. So we'll let it sit for a few days. We're in public hearing only today anyway, but I would anticipate we will bring this back for you. Yes, Mr.
And Mr. Chair, for the record, nothing to do with Senate Bill 802, but I just wanted to clarify. To my knowledge, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission is, in regard to agents' compensation and the inventory reduction issues, those were all issues that the legislature directed the agency to undertake. So we were just going through that process because the legislature asked us to cut back on funds. So for the record.
Ask you to get that in.
Thank you.
Well, you know, this relating to distilled liquor, we could take back those things in this bill if you'd like.
Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 802. Okay, let's open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 867. And what we'll do here, this is our CPA bill, and Mr. Stenbridge readjusts himself in the chair of importance. We'll ask him to give us a briefing, and then we'll have Mr. Steve McConnell from the Oregon Society of CPAs come forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 867 authorizes accountants licensed in other states to practice public accountancy in Oregon without notification or payment of fees to the Oregon Board of Accountancy. You have a dash one amendment which provides some technical changes for wording for clarification of intent. It clarifies definition of substantial equivalency, for example. So that's Senate Bill 867.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Mr. McConnell, please come forward. And just as an advisory members and folks in the audience, I know there are some different points of view on this bill, but so far Mr. McConnell is signed up to testify, so I'm hopeful that if there's any other concerns that people will, when I ask for other people in the audience, that they will come forward if they have some concerns. Mr. McConnell, welcome.
Senator Metzger, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. My name for the record is Steve McConnell, and I am representing the Oregon Society of CPAs. You have before you the prepared testimony, and rather than spend time on that, I'd just like to sort of summarize what 867 is about and why we think it's a good
idea. We appreciate
that.
Thank you very much.
CPAs are licensed on a state-by-state basis, just as we as drivers are licensed on a state-by-state basis. The difference is that CPAs have to pass a uniform examination, so every CPA licensed in the United States has passed essentially the same examination. However, the licensure requirements in different states do differ, and they particularly differ with respect to educational requirements for sitting for the exam and some experience requirements. Oregon takes the position, as do a number of other states, that 150 hours is required for licensure, and that is the most stringent requirement available. Currently, CPAs with offices who are officed outside of Oregon have to register with the Board of Accountancy, and they have to pay a fee as condition of to practice in Oregon. There is not the same kind of a situation as one would have with a driver's license, where you can simply drive into another state and utilize your driver's license in that other state. This requirement for registration is an unnecessary and potentially confusing burden so long as the Board of Accountancy has appropriate jurisdiction over those CPAs. So again, essentially the requirement as it currently exists is similar to us as drivers having to think ahead and be sure that we stop at a port of entry before we drive into Washington in order to legally drive in Washington. Now, with the change in our business climate, where more and more companies are operating across state lines, it's increasingly the case that CPAs also are operating across those, or need to operate across state lines to effectively serve their clients. So the AICPA, the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, and the OSCPA are collectively working to enable CPAs from other states that have the same kind of stringent education requirements that we have to practice in Oregon without paying a fee and without registering with the State Board of Accountancy, and yet with full authority of the State Board of Accountancy to discipline any miscreants. And that full authority is obtained in the statute by providing that any out-of-state practitioner who comes in and practices in the state automatically gives the State Board of Accountancy jurisdiction over them. And this kind of arrangement has already been approved by 38 other state legislatures. Now, as there's a similar kind of arrangement that would apply to firms, but it's a bit more limited. And it's limited in that firms that are performing audits and other certain kinds of higher level services would be required to register with the Board of Accountancy. And that summarizes 867, and I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you, Mr. McCollum. I'm just looking over the Dash 1 amendment, some of the changes there. Are there any changes you want to point out in the Dash 1 amendment that are from the original bill?
Our attempt simply was to try to make it clearer. The committee administrator indicated, the primary focus here was to redefine and make clear the definition of substantial equivalency so that it is absolutely clear that it deals with the 150-hour requirement.
Okay. So my first question would be, understand, as you put it, what you're trying to do in standardizing these issues, and by practicing they would essentially be accepting the jurisdiction of Oregon laws and regulations, correct?
Senator Metzger, that's correct.
All right. So then my question would be, but they don't have to report, you know, kind of like notify the State Board of Accountancy on this. So my question is, if they don't know you're practicing, doesn't that hinder the ability to regulate folks? If you know, you're regulated by us, but you don't have to tell us you're here doing this. I mean, if you'd explain that to me.
Senator Metzger, that's an excellent question. And the first part is, this is already going on. People are coming in and practicing in the state, and the State Board of Accountancy doesn't know they're there. Right now, the statute provides that in order for the State Board of Accountancy to have the kind of authority that they need to practice, or to have authority over licensees, they have to register. This provision says, even as long as they come into the state, the board has authority over them. Generally, what happens is that if there's a problem, the problem is created by a complaint. And the complaint is made by a member of the public who walks in and says, you know, I worked with this particular CPA, and I know he was here because he worked for me, and now there's a problem. And so the board finds out about those kinds of people through the complaints process. And that's where they're going to need to have the authority, is because there's been a complaint. Otherwise, the person's in there, just like they're driving in the state of Washington. The DOL or the Department of Motor Vehicles in Washington doesn't need to know they're there unless the state police have a problem.
Well, actually, Mr. McConnell, this committee is going to be working on a transportation plan, and actually you gave me a great idea, don't you think? I know there's this deal, kind of pay the price with license fee when they come in. I mean, you know, because we don't want to tax ourselves, so we can tax other guys. Thank you. Questions for Mr. McConnell?
I have a quick
Senator
comment.
George.
I just want to say that it's refreshing to actually have an industry group come in and actually ask to open up the field for additional competition, and I applaud the CPAs for doing so, because we haven't had that very often in this committee, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Anybody else want to testify on Senate Bill 867? Anybody have some concerns? Aha! I thought so. Mr. Hearn, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pat Hearn, Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Accountancy. The Board of Accountancy has formally, by motion and vote on the record, opposed SB 867 in its current form. Their concerns are many, but one of the foremost, Mr. Chair, relates to the question that you asked, Mr. McConnell, relating to how's the board going to know that someone is in the state practicing, and Mr. McConnell's answer about, well, a complaint would be filed is certainly correct. There's some concerns, however, to the enforcement process beyond that, relative to how we could actually enforce any actions that were taken, such as notification of a contested case hearing, conduct of the hearing, all the due process things that we currently have here under the Administrative Procedures Act. The board is desirous of trying to reach some amendments that would be suitable to both the society and the board, and we would hope that we would be able to achieve that.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Hearn?
If I could, Mr.
Yes, Senator George.
I guess, Mr. Hearn, I'm trying to figure out, my relationship with my accountant is a business-to-business, and the only time it seemed like you'd be involved in that situation is if I filed a complaint. And so do you have any real problem with the overall goal, which is to allow me to hire whatever accountant I wanted to, even if they were based in Vancouver, Washington, or Boise, Idaho? Do you have any problem with that theory that we open this up so people can come in and practice, and I can hire my accountant from wherever I want?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I don't believe the board does hold that position, and in fact there's currently a provision known as substantial equivalency where an accountant from out of state can come in and obtain permission to practice, but it does involve notification to the board, and that's a key issue from the society's point of view, is that they're not desirous of having that notification requirement.
Thank you, Mr. Hearn.
You're welcome, Mr. Chair.
I got
Thank
a note
you.
That Keith Myers would like to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, my name is Keith Myers. I'm a CPA in public practice in the city of Portland. I wanted to echo, number one, Mr. McConnell's testimony on this, and to let you know that in the current business environment that we live in, a lot of your businesses here in Oregon, like the rest of businesses in all the other states, are getting more and more global in nature. And in order for CPAs to actually serve their clients, whether they're employees of these companies or whether they are CPAs in public practice providing services to their clients, they need to go where their clients are. And their clients are not just here in the state of Oregon, but in other places. The issue of notification might seem to be a simple one, but businesses are relatively fluid, and the problems that they face are relatively fluid. And the act of having to go through the process of notification, application, paying your fees, am I or am I not licensed to practice in this state over here, is very cumbersome. I had a call this morning from another CPA who requested my assistance in dealing with one of their clients in another state, and it was something very quick in nature. I needed to act on it relatively quickly. And I mean, even today might have been too much, so I'm working on it tomorrow. But the process of actually going through the notification process in order to service that client's needs is very difficult in today's economy because things happen so fast. And the process of having to go through the notification process in whatever state you're working in has become very, very difficult for CPAs, as I said, whether they're employees of other employers that have offices in other states or they're dealing with issues for clients that require them to travel across state lines.
So is it just the problem, Mr. Myers, then, in filling out the paperwork or paying the fee or whatever in a timely way? Or is there an objection just to that process altogether?
Well, I think the practical issue is probably, I mean, there's no objection to a process. It's just that it's very difficult to work in that type of environment today. The idea of mobility, which is what we're talking about here, the idea of CPAs to travel across state lines, is a national movement. The AICPA and the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy have been working on this for several years, and as Mr. McConnell had testified, that 38 states have already passed it, several in this year. Another 7 states are working on it as we speak right now. The whole idea is to make it much more seamless for CPAs to provide services nationally. And so notification sort of goes against what we're trying to accomplish here. The whole idea of mobility is, if you're coming into my state, Mr. CPA, Ms. CPA, you come on into our state, service the clients here, because our business individuals, our business needs the services that you're providing. But when you cross into this state, you are going to be subject to the laws of our Board of Accountancy when you do that. So it's no escape of it. You come in, you provide services, you're under our jurisdiction. So that's how I would answer that question.
What does it take to do the notification? What does that involve?
Well, Mr. Hearn could probably answer it easier than me, but primarily you have a process where you fill out a form, and it's sent in, and you pay a fee of, I'm not even sure what it is, $100, and then they will let you know over a period of time whether you have met the substantial equivalency requirements in order to do that. The problem is it takes time to do that, and while an individual is waiting around, whatever the business issue is still ticking. And by the time that you have gone through the process, it might be too late. There are many times when you just cannot act quick enough. It takes pre-planning in order to do that. Most of the time, you don't know what an issue is until it's right upon you. And so pre-planning is difficult to do in a lot of situations. So this whole idea of allowing CPAs to come into the state of Oregon, and some people have asked, well, why would Oregon CPAs like this? As Senator George said, that's increasing competition. But the members of the Oregon Society CPAs and the CPAs here in Oregon understand that they are working in a global environment. And just like they have issues that their clients have that they need to tend to across state lines, they understand that other CPAs moving into here really in some ways benefits the entire global community. The idea of businesses here in Oregon being able to be serviced by the technical expertise and industry expertise that not necessarily is here in Oregon all of the time. Just like I was asked to deal with another CPA's client that's outside of the state. There are a lot of times where we do need to work collaboratively with each other, and it's difficult to do it in a timely manner when we have to be notifying other jurisdictions that we're coming in or going out of that state.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Myers. Any questions for Mr. Myers? Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else wish to testify on Senate Bill 867? We have the glaring eyes of Senator Telfer in the back of the room, but didn't ask to testify. But would you like to testify? Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 867. Mr. Stembridge, you want to give us a briefing about tomorrow?
Tomorrow we have a bill on outdoor advertising signs and a discussion of a moving violation penalty.
Okay. Thank you, members. We're adjourned.